The University of Kansas Health System is proud to be the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Current. From youth athletes to the pros, we put player care first to turn their dreams into reality. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/kccurrent.
Hour number two of the program begins right now, brought to you by our friends at Worth Harley Davidson North, I-29 and Tiffany Springs is where you'll find the good people, Rick Worth and his staff. An unbelievable job. If you're in the market for a motorcycle, the time to buy is right now at Worth Harley Davidson North, I-29 and Tiffany Springs. That's 9400 Northwest Prairie View Road. If you're going to GPS it, never, ever have there been lower payments than there are right now. At Worth, go see him today. We're going to talk some soccer here in the program as we are joined right now by Paul Carr, good friend of the program, is with us. He handles the soccer talk of all kinds as the director of content development for True Media Networks. Paul, how are you?
I'm well. Good to talk to you, Soren.
And it's good to speak to you. And we'll talk about Sporting Kansas City here in a minute. But let's start with the World Cup. What do you think of this one? I hear people saying this is, the excitement. It's been incredible. It's been a fantastic World Cup. Is that the case, or are these people that for the first time are getting exposed to the World Cup, and this is what it's always like?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, I'm always hesitant to judge a major tournament until you get down to the semis and the final where things really, really matter. You know, it's like judging an NCAA tournament before the Final Four. You know, it can be fun, but until you get down to the meat and potatoes, if you will, I think that's kind of where the legacy will truly happen. But we've had more late goals than we've had any World Cup in terms of like the last 10 minutes and stoppage time. So there has been lots of excitement, and now we're just hoping the greatness carries over to these last three important games.
All right, well, what's the takeaway from a couple of different teams? Number one, when we have Spain and Germany going down, is there a lesson there? You know, a lot of people have said that the lesson on the defending champion going down is that you remain too loyal to players that you should move on from.
Yeah.
And is it as simple as that with Germany? Let's start with them.
I think so. You know, it's hard to get into the mental side of it, get into their heads, but I think there's something to, there's been a little less fired up, a little less motivated as players. And we've seen it the last three World Cups now, Italy in 06, Spain in 2010. And Germany 14 all won it, came back and went out in the group stage. And they all kind of looked the same. They were a little older as a team, a lot of that's because they brought back the same players. So I think a lot of it is just as simple as they don't have that hunger. And it's not something that, you know, I can really analyze statistically, but I think it's a consistency that we see there. And as for Spain, you know, it's tough. They changed coaches 2 days before the tournament. And I have to think that had a big role to play. There were definitely times where the new coach, Hierro, who hasn't done a lot of coaching, didn't seem to be able to make the right tactical substitution or whatnot. So I think that was a big factor. And, you run to the home team at a World Cup and you can't score a lot of your chances. You know, that also happens sometimes.
What do we make of Russia pushing forward? What kind of statement for soccer is that? Just that the home field, I mean, I know they're out now, but that the home field advantage really, really means something? Or is this a statement that, you know, countries like Russia are coming up and maybe a team like the U.S. could have, it's even more hurtful that the U.S. didn't make it because they could have maybe done the same kind of thing?
I think, again, it's a little of both. I think the home team is really the more dominant factor here. They also got a sweetheart draw because when you're the home team, you get seeded. So that helps you play a weak group. And then they also got a weak draw on the whole. So they, were probably the second best team in the group, which they could easily have been the fourth best team in a different group. So that's a big factor. And once you get out of that group, then you're a knockout play and it's anything can happen sort of thing. So if you're the U.S., I think that's something you should strive for. You always just want to get out of that group. And whether it's a tough draw like the U.S. got in 14 or, a slightly easier draw like the U.S. got in 2010, you get out of that group and stuff can happen because it's knockout soccer and the margins are so slim that you can get through on penalty kicks or one little mistake here and there.
What do we think of what CONCACAF ended up showing for itself?
I think we would have liked to see Mexico make a run. And it's not so much an issue to me of Mexico not beating Brazil, but Mexico just laid an egg against Sweden in that final group game. And if they would have done that, they would have gotten Switzerland in the round of 16 instead of Brazil. So I think it's a big missed opportunity for Mexico. Panama, you know, they're in a group with Belgium and England. They were never getting out of that group. Costa Rica, you know, maybe you'd like to see them push a little bit more to escape out of that group, but I don't think I'd call them a disappointment. The big disappointment for me from a CONCACAF standpoint is that Mexico did not win a very winnable group after such a great start, and that put them in a spot to get bounced by Brazil.
What would the U.S. have done if they'd been in this tournament?
It depends so much on the draw, but chances are the U.S. would have been the third best team probably in almost any of these groups, and then you're just in a really tight scenario. It would have looked a lot like 2014 in the sense that U.S. probably would have lost to the best team in the group, which would have been Germany. They ideally would beat the worst team in the group, which in 2014 was Ghana, and then it comes down to what you can do against that second-best team, which was Portugal, and the U.S. was able to get through ahead of them after drawing on goal difference. So I think it would have been a similar spot where it really could have gone either way. U.S. would have been about probably 50-50, maybe a little worse to get through, and if they get a couple bounces, they would have been able to do it.
Okay. We're talking right now to Paul Carr, Director of Content Development for True Media Networks, about the World Cup. A couple more on the World Cup, and then I'll switch over to Sporting Kansas City. England, you know, they you hear English folks talk about them, and they're just, like, waiting. They sound like Missouri Tiger fans, right? They're just waiting for how it's going to go horribly wrong. That's their expectation. Is it simply going to – is this just building to another disappointment, or are they a real threat to get it done?
I mean, just the math of it all, you know, they have, whatever, there's four teams left. They have a 1-in-4 shot, if you want to just look at it like that, says that there's going to be some disappointment here. The thing that worries me about England a little is they've relied so much on set pieces, on corner kicks, on free kicks, and they've been so good at them, but haven't created a ton of chances from open play. And, you know, part of that is the opponents have been, especially early, were really willing to foul them and not let them get through, et cetera. But they're going to face, you know, a couple more stout, well, unless they get Belgium, they'll face two more stout defenses to try to win a title. And if they can't create something from open play, I'm worried those set pieces are going to dry up and there's going to be a lot of disappointment. It's going to be pretty entertaining, though, to watch the fans, regardless of what happens, because it'll either be it might be a burn it all down either way sort of thing.
Yeah, something's catching fire. Beware. Will it be in anger or joy that it is set on fire? What do you think of Croatia, and what will it mean if a country like Croatia can win this?
Wait, I mean, it would be the biggest, if they won the tournament, it would be the biggest title upset that we've ever seen, and I don't think it would be close from a World Cup perspective. They have had this generation of players that is playing on top clubs, Madrid and Barcelona and Juventus, for, you know, this is the end of it. So basically a decade, and they've had this promise that they've failed to live up to it almost every major tournament. So it's not surprising in the sense that if you just look at who they have and how good those players are, but they haven't done anything close to this yet. They haven't gotten past the quarters at a major tournament before this. So it's there for them, and they'll never have a better chance, and they may never have a better generation. So it would be great, especially, I think, to like hardcore soccer heads, just to see some new blood and these players that have been well respected for so long get some due on the international level. It's a tough ask. They're, I'd say, pretty clearly the fourth best team that's left.
All right, but it's sounding like you don't think this is like the beginning of Croatia coming up. It sounds like this is their, everything's lined up. It's their one big shot. Like, this isn't a sign that Croatia is becoming a global power.
Right. Yeah. I don't pretend to know Croatia's youth system super well. But just knowing who's on this team, it's a veteran-heavy team. So, you know, maybe it triggers something in Croatia and they can make a jump to the next level. But getting to that top tier, especially in Europe, is tough because there's so many well-established countries ahead of you. They could be in this middle tier for a while, but making a big jump would be surprising to me.
Paul, if you can't give me a detailed breakdown of the U-12s in Croatia, I'm not sure why I'm talking to you, my friend. Let's go to the other side of the bracket. A lot of people like France. I heard a lot of people say France is the best team coming in, but not a lot of people were picking France to win it all.
Yep.
Are they now, and Rob's pick, fast-talking Rob, like Belgium, you know, who is the favorite now? It's got to be one of these two, right?
Yes. I think France is the favorite to win the title just because they have the most balance. You know, they have a pretty strong defense. In that Argentina game, they gave up 3 goals, but other than that, they've been very solid. and they have as much offensive firepower as anyone. It's just a matter of getting that clicking. Still doesn't seem like their offense is really clicking, but they're facing a Belgium team that has perhaps more offensive firepower, but a highly questionable defense. So that's the X factor for Belgium. Are they going to be able to hold France to less than two goals? I mean, I'd be kind of surprised if they did. Brazil could easily have had two or three or four against Belgium. So I think France is the favorite because they're the most balanced team that's left.
All right, and it sounds to me like it's going to be France easy based on how you're putting it together. I mean, I'm with you. Their defense, Belgium, does not seem to have a big interest in stopping anybody. They feel like they'll just take the ball out of the net and go score, go in the other direction. But is it going to be that easy?
It could be. I mean, I could easily see France putting up three, but I could easily see Belgium putting that up too. I just think the likelihood of France scoring multiple goals is much higher, and I have much more confidence that they can shut down a Belgium attack. So it would not shock me. You know, I would put France at like a 60% favorite to advance over Croatia. But it could go either way, of course. But I think France has the better possibilities of shutting down its opponent.
All right, Paul, let me ask you about Sporting Kansas City. We posed the topic a week or so ago about does Sporting go into their usual swoon, their second-half swoon that seems to be their MO. Is that what we're watching here, or is it just they had to play three games in a week and that'll run it down on anybody?
I'm pretty torn on this. My head says the latter, that, look, three games in a week, I think two of them are on the road. They're dealing with, you know, just a little bit of injuries and suspensions with, you know, Espinoza was out, Beasley missed a game, Shallowy was suspended, and now we don't know what Shelton and Opara are up to. So the head part of me says, it'll be fine, you know. So you draw points to Toronto at home, whatever. You go on the road to Montreal, you know, stuff like that happens. But the heart side of me is totally what you're saying. Like, well, here we go again. This is going to happen. I feel like this team is deeper than it has been the last few years. But some of that depth is really young, you know, whether it's Jalen Lindsay or whatever coming off the bench that looks like he could play at this level but just hasn't done it yet. So I think this team is better suited to fend off that swoon. But my heart is starting to worry that this is deja vu all over again.
You know, the Gutierrez piece is the part that, you know, is looming out there. Is when they get him back, that's going to be a significant piece. That and the transfer window, which they're said to be closing in on a guy to come in and be another striker. I mean, is that enough if they get, you know, one, Gutierrez back, and then two, add another piece? Is that enough to make them, I don't want to say, or is it, could that make them the best team in the MLS?
I don't know if it would make them best. I mean, Atlanta has looked like a machine. Both New York teams might be better right now, although changing coaches for both of them, we don't really know what that's going to be. So I feel like Atlanta is probably a step ahead, but it definitely, if Casey makes those changes, if the Earth comes back and it's fine, then I think they're in a good spot to get, I would say, a bye through the first round, which, if you're Kansas City, that's really, I think, what you got to play for. Because, you know, it's four straight knockout rounds all on the road. So you really want to get a bye. At the worst case, you want to be that three or four seed and get a home game. So I think it should be enough. It's really just a question how healthy is Gutierrez going to be. The Shelton question, the injury thing, is out there now too. So another striker would be nice. I don't know that it's essential if Shelton is healthy. If he's not, then you definitely got to find someone. Rubio's been okay in flashes. I don't think you want him to be your sole forward moving forward, though.
You know, did you see the Sporting in Atlanta game?
Yes. That was, what, a month ago or so?
Yeah, it's been maybe more, maybe 6 weeks or so.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah.
All right, so my impression was the reason I ask is because when these – look, they've the two losses and a draw – this weekend, you know, kind of make this a moot point. But when they were up there at the top and the flashy goal differential, they were still being ranked by a lot of people in the power rankings like third, for whatever that's worth, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But against Atlanta for 20 minutes, 25, I can't remember what it was, first third of first quarter of the game, first half of the first half, Atlanta was just overwhelming them. I mean, it was like a shooting gallery. Yeah. And then they kind of found themselves – is what Peter Vermes will tell you, and then they went up a man when the goalie got the red card. I kind of felt like they went up a man, and that's when the momentum got going. Peter Vermes saw them kind of finding their footing and getting going beforehand. And then they played very well. I mean, they're up a man. I got it. But that's kind of what you do, right? They got up a man because they countered. And they put them in a bad spot. So is Atlanta that much better than everybody, or are they just a little bit of Belgium, right? Like they're going to run into a team that defends and lose.
Yeah, that's a pretty decent comparison. I think Atlanta at its peak is probably that much better than anyone else can be, especially offensively. They can overwhelm you. And I think when you see them for the first time, especially on the road, then that first 20 minutes that Casey had can happen. And it will happen. It's happened to a lot of teams in the last couple of seasons. So I don't think there's any concern or shame necessarily about those first 20 minutes. Same time, though, when you run into these teams in the playoffs, you know, a bad 20 minutes and you're done. So Casey has just got to get it together a little faster. So I wouldn't be too concerned about it, but that's what Casey is up against if they want to be the best team in MLS. Atlanta at its peak is going to blow the doors off pretty much anybody in the league.
Yeah. All right. It's not what I want to hear right now. So where does Sporting finish now based on the timeline, assuming there's no more setbacks? Not any setbacks. There hadn't been any setbacks so far for Gutierrez. Where do they finish in the West? You think they get the bye? They're one of those top two seeds, but are they number one?
I don't think so. I think just a little bit too much ground to make up on a couple teams. Yeah, I don't know if LAFC can maintain this all year, but if anyone could do it with an expansion team, I think it's Bob Bradley. So I think they've got a real shot. If I'm placing my money right now, I'd probably slot them in that third spot, though. Bradley has done so much with expansion teams in the past, and other clubs in Dallas looks like they're starting to find their rhythm. Portland is probably the fourth best team, and they could definitely make a push. They got a couple games in hand on Kansas City, I think. So if I had a bet, I'd put KC in that three spot right now, which isn't where they want to be, but it's better than where they've been the last few years.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we're talking to Paul Carr from True Media Networks. Final Four time. It's brought to you by Mosquito Squad. KansasCity.MosquitoSquad.com. That is the location that you can go right now and get set up to protect your family, your friends, your pets from the squad I use to protect my family. That's Mosquito Squad, or call 877-MO-SQUAD online. It's KansasCity.MosquitoSquad.com. Paul, I'll start you with this one. First of all, what's the best country? We'll take the U.S. out of it. What's the best country to host the World Cup?
Germany. I mean, all the cliches of organization and clean and easy to get around. I was there for a Women's World Cup, which is obviously a smaller scale, but it was just so easy to get around the country and get everything done. And they're obviously passionate, so I would say Germany.
Yep, you're the second person to give me that answer. So, all right. Will Kansas City get a match, get a location for the 2026 World Cup? We're one of the finalists. Will Kansas City end up being one of the sites?
Yeah, when I ranked them just in my head, and I had KC right on the bubble. I think they're going to get 10. I think I'm at like 11 or maybe 12. So, I think if I had a bet, I would say no, but I could easily see them get pushed up. I think the training facilities and things like that are really helpful for the city, because And even if they don't get games, I would gotta suspect some team will be based there or have a training facility there or something.
All right, you said Sporting third. How far do they go in the postseason?
Well, I mean, they've looked so good at the end of the year at times. I mean, just like the knockout games, you know, you feel like if they could have won that, they could have gone on a run a couple times in the last few years. So if I'm saying they're going to get a home game and thinking it through in my head, those home and homes, once you get past the first round, there's home field advantage doesn't matter all that much. So I'm going to say they get to the conference finals and then fall to LAFC or Dallas.
Okay. All right. I'll take that. And have you ever cleaned up a locker room on your way out after playing in it the way the Japanese team did at the World Cup?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. You know, I never got a locker room, so I'd like to tell you that I would. I never had the opportunity. Yeah, that was impressive.
Yeah.
That will live with me forever, what they did and what their fans did in the stands. That's unbelievable. What a great moment.
Yeah, I think the only time I had to clean up a locker room was punishment for something else.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, interesting. Paul, great stuff as always, buddy. Appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
You bet, Thorne. Have a good one.
All right, Paul Carr. Joining us, breaking down the soccer, formerly of Stats and Info at ESPN, now the Director of Content Development for True Media Networks. We will take a break, talk a little more World Cup because Rob is all bubbly. Talk about Sporting Kansas City's draw. They did come back, down 1-0, take a 2-1 lead. Nate Buchady just screaming and yelling like a fool, you know, and then he forgot that the game wasn't over, you know, and so really let me down. Calling the game, my 8-year-old just in tears. Like, Dad, why did he do that? It's Nate, honey. I got to travel with the guy. You think I'm looking forward to it?
She just goes, "Yeah, Nate."
We'll do that. Coming up, 2-minute drill in the next hour as well. You're in the program.